This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
His book, The Long Reckonings, tells a story of war, peace, and redemption. The war is done for America, but not for those who served there, nor for the Vietnamese people who live with the remains of the American bombing campaign, the American herbicide campaign, and the damage done to generations in Vietnam. At the same time, America enters into a period of political turmoil following the exit from Vietnam during the time of Richard Nixon's second administration, particularly. There were events, the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, they were throwing medals on the steps of the Capitol. There were protests. There were some radical statements being made as well. Chuck Searcy, one of our protagonists, participates in that way. He's a very skilled communicator at the University of Georgia and in Washington. Manus Campbell, on the other hand, withdraws, is a wanderer, is restless. At the same time, there's an overarching story that explains a deal of America's confusion and hesitation about the war during this period, which George guides me to say is 1973, that's the Nixon administration, through the Carter administration, through the Reagan administration, into the first term of Bill Clinton. That is the story of missing in action, left behind, the MIA flag. George, I've very carefully followed your reporting. What we have here is a legend that never had credible evidence, but the search continued for living MIA, correct, George? What was the vision in the 70s and 80s that made this such a political obstacle to those who wanted to speak of the war?
Well, I think the context for it was that America was traumatized by its first ever experience of losing a war. And I think there was even a great denial about using the word losing, and a body of opinion that was pretty vociferous that the reason the war had been lost was that the troops had been stabbed in the back, that was the phrase, by the media, by politicians, by faithless civilians. I mean, it's a phenomenon that I think is still to some degree with us and has been at the root of a lot of extreme right-wing politics to this day. You know, these concepts morphed eventually into the idea of the deep state and the fake news. And those voices were very powerful in this atmosphere of bitterness in which the veterans, quite rightly, not in my view because they had been stabbed in the back by any means, they'd been given vast resources to fight the war. And it was probably an unwinnable war because the only alternative to fighting a war of attrition, which both sides were doing, and Westmoreland put this very clearly, he said, is either attrition or it's annihilation, which meant nuclear weapons. That was politically impossible. And I think for that reason, the war was essentially unwinnable. But the veterans were treated very badly. No one knew how to deal with them. They were traumatized. They were sick. Their families didn't know how to communicate with them. They didn't know how to talk about what they'd been through. And they'd been defeated. And there were also questions not only about America's might, but about its virtue. This was a whole new situation to grapple with. And the MIAs and the supposed POWs became a sort of lightning rod issue for that bitterness and that sense of conspiracy theories. The search for MIAs, I know the head of the League of Families, who absolutely rightly says, you know, this is a moral humanitarian obligation. You lose your young men in combat. You have a moral obligation to try to find them and bring them home and bury them and restore them to their families. But a lot of that movement became hijacked by this idea that somewhere, for some dark communist purpose, deep in the jungles of Laos, there were these living prisoners who were being held for years for no one knew what reason, even a bargaining chip or just pure sadism. And it really took root among a lot of Hollywood celebrities, among a lot of extreme right-wing politicians. And it still really defined U.S.-Vietnamese relations for well over a decade. Ironically, it was Reagan in his second term who began the process of normalization in a very preliminary way, which was a great irony of this war. You know, normally, like Germany and Japan, the terms of the post-war were set by the winners. And really, in Vietnam, the terms were set by the losers because the MIA issue blocked any other conversation. But they realized around 87 that it wasn't bringing the prisoners home and it wasn't bringing the MIAs home. So they took a new approach, which was to engage with the Vietnamese. The Vietnamese understood it was their interests to be cooperative, and things began to change, except for this one faction who insisted, against all the evidence, congressional investigations repeatedly found there were no living prisoners. But it went on right through the 1992 presidential campaign in the campaign of Ross Perot, which arguably cost George H.W. Bush the presidency and ironically brought to power, brought to office somebody that the right-wing veterans community hated, Bill Clinton, a draft dodger.
The numbers are there were total missing in action of American of military, 2,646. That's the number. 591 were brought home by the Nixon administration. There were no additional living, missing in action American military figures found to my reading. Is that correct, George? No additional.
There was never any credible evidence found that any prisoners survived. What you had was this kind of industry in rumor making, in, you know, this community of people, opportunists, right, grew up in Thailand and Laos, who were coming up with, you know, animal bones to prove they'd found graves, to come up with live sightings of people that never existed. And it just kept this bitterness going.
And in the meantime, a woman named Adelaide Borden, who was called Lady Borden or Adelaide, is visiting maternity hospitals and is in Vietnam seeing the deformed babies and the fetuses. This information is available, but it's not being discussed in Washington. And is that because of MIA? Because there was a refusal to deal with the rest of the damage of the war until MIA was answered?
I wouldn't simplify it quite like that. I'd say there were a number of stages that the process of normalization had to go through. It began with Vietnamese cooperation on finding MIAs. That removed that initial barrier. Once the Vietnamese had done that, then there was a small-scale reciprocal humanitarian move, which was to offer them aid for prosthetics for the disabled. And that very quickly raised the question, well, why are all these people disabled? And a large part of the reason was they were stepping on unexploded American bombs. Once that happened, you know, that was a fairly easy step because you didn't have to argue about cause and effect. Somebody steps on a cluster bomb, has their leg blown off, there's no debate. Whereas with Agent Orange, the science of Agent Orange was and still is extremely complex and full of uncertainties. And you cannot prove in any individual case that a particular disease is associated causally. The American veterans had to fight for more than 15 years to be recognized. And a lot of the recognition, it wasn't based on hard, definitive science. It was based on politics. It was based on guilt. It was based on the fact that they had a lot of moral authority and the country felt very badly by the end of the 80s about how they'd been treated. And they got the Agent Orange Act. And it said, if you were in Vietnam in the years of the war and you had one of a number of diseases,
there would be a presumed association and you would be eligible for benefits. But the Vietnamese never got that association because when they talked about Agent Orange, it was construed as communist propaganda, lies, an attempted extortion. It raised the specter of corporate liability for the producers, and they didn't get recognition for another decade.
I'm speaking with George Black, the author of The Long Reckoning, A Story of War, Peace, and Redemption in Vietnam. We're going to Hanoi, 1994, with Chuck Searcy. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Matthews.